Welcome to the Inner Fight Endurance Podcast, episode 177. Welcome, Rob Foster.
Hello, Tom Walker. How are you?
You're doing a podcast tour at the moment.
Oh, I know. It's a nightmare.
What's your book called and when's it coming out?
Lactate. That's it.
Just that?
Yeah, just the one.
Nice. I listened to your show the other day on your coaching ethos.
Oh, yeah?
On the Inner Fight show.
What do you think of it?
Yeah. I think if you know you, then you know.
But if you don't know me, then you don't.
Then it's interesting.
Very good.
How's your legs? This is a new thing to ask, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. Legs are good. Legs are... Well, they didn't really have to go in the bin too much, did they? Like 3 hours worth of lactate threshold. Funny that. And then they recover quite quick and they'll go again tomorrow.
Do you want to give us a bit of context for that?
So yeah, on Friday just gone, we did the Coaches into the Darkness edition and... Me and you both got in a spot of bother where we went off a little bit too excited maybe for the heat. So even though the power numbers looked decent and not too strong, the heat got us. And then on the run of 25K for me, I just started emptying my insides from my stomach into the sand, which is a lovely experience. Felt a bit wonky, got a bit dizzy. And then I think you did the same. So
yeah,
it was a lovely night, good learning. And then Marcus just trotted on by with a big smile on his face. And that was that.
What do you think if you, let's say you did slow down and you did run the 50, but it wasn't in the time that you set out and wanted to do, if you could hold up both scenarios against each other, which one do you take?
I think it depends on your own original objective.
Yours, you.
Mine, yeah. It didn't mean a lot.
So you'd rather have a crack and fail?
Yeah.
Yeah, than fail at the whole thing?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I've done it 3 times now, once in the light, once in the dark. I did them both to a decent level. And then this time I thought, yeah, give it a nudge.
But yeah.
Then, yeah.
Yeah. So same advice for your clients or?
Absolutely not. stick to the plan.
Stick to the plan. What's most people's plan? Just go easier than you think easy is.
What's it? 10% in your back pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
That old chestnut, that works an absolute dream. Yeah, just to get through it. Because most of Into the Darkness essentially is just a completion goal, right?
Yeah.
It's something to do to push yourself and to really push your limits. And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. I think it's it always delivers.
That's so good.
It's the nice part of it, isn't it?
It's such good talking points and learning as well, right? I think it's just, there's so much magic happens in that night.
Yeah.
Guest towel, magic sponge.
Magic water bottle, like looking like some photos.
Yeah. And then it's, there's a lot of bodies out there, but a lot of success as well.
Yeah.
Can't wait for this Friday. It's going to be class.
It is. This actually comes out on Wednesday. So if you are thinking what we're talking about, head up to Al Kudra on a Friday evening and you'll see.
Yeah. And you'll see quite a lot of what we're talking about today, is right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, hopefully not too much.
Not too much.
That moves on nicely to today's topic of show, lactate, lactic acid, lactation.
Lactation devices.
Mate, it's been a hot topic for the last 2 years, probably, thanks to the Norwegians. Lactic acid is well known within the sports science world. Probably well known now in the more open coaching world, if you like.
Yeah.
But particularly within endurance sport, not so much in other sports. I rarely hear it talked about in other sports, actually.
It's spoken about. I think in anything that involves endurance, it's spoken about.
Yeah,
and endurance. Sports science in the background, testing a way to make sure that their fitness levels are going up.
Mm.
So in professional sports teams, it's pretty well drilled.
Yeah.
Maybe
I'm not in other sports enough to hear it.
I just open BBC Sport and then just flick through. No, but it's huge in endurance sport at the minute. Yeah, because Norwegians, right? But it's actually been around since the 1930s, the concept of it. So it's really nothing new.
So what are we talking about?
It's lactate or lactic acid. So the two different byproducts, they're actually the same thing. So you start with lactic acid, which is produced in the cells. And that's basically, it's a manifestation of byproduct of breakdown in glucose. So it's not a bad thing. It's like most of it gets recycled within the muscle.
Yeah.
And then you've got lactate. So when there's too much, the processing of that lactic acid isn't high enough in the muscle, the cellular level, it gets chucked out into the blood and gets turned into lactate because the lactic acid can't go into the blood because of the ions make it too acidic and would change the, well, provide a very dangerous situation for your blood system.
Yeah.
So that it's, and essentially it's a marker of how your body's working, and at a cellular level, what sort of energy is being produced and by what method.
Excellent. Great definition.
Was it?
It's not what causes the burning in the muscle though.
No.
Which a lot of people think it is.
Because it's been misconstrued through like research in the past that maybe it hasn't been too scientific or a little bit basic.
Blaming firemen for fires.
Yeah. Yes.
We won't go into what does, well, it's hydrogen, isn't it, that causes the burn in the muscle?
Yeah.
But we don't need to go there.
Let's leave that for a different show.
We probably can't without going back to our textbooks from uni. So you explained it really well then. So it's a byproduct of exercise. When we're looking at that then, talk to us a bit more with the different types of metabolism, which some people might understand, but basically the way we gain energy for exercise. There's a few different ways that we can actually do that. It's probably good to explain that so that we can fit lactate into that explanation.
Yeah, so let's dumb it down even more. Let's just go for the two main ones that people think about when they hear about different intensities of exercise, which is aerobic with oxygen and anaerobic without oxygen.
Yeah.
So both of those cannot be seen in isolation. That's for starters, okay? And then once you look at that, then you go, there's a continuum of the percentage of which energy is produced through aerobic with oxygen.
I love that because it's so, when you know it, it's very obvious. But if you don't understand it and you think, oh, I'm either burning oxygen or I'm burning carbohydrate, it's too simplistic. Yeah. We can never do one nor the other.
Never in isolation, right? Yeah. Think of like a Tesla or a dual powered car, like a battery and petrol. Mm. Something not a Tesla, that's a terrible example.
Terrible.
A hybrid, right? And you see on the dash, oh, I've gone deaf.
Okay, that's all right. Keep talking, I can hear
you. I couldn't hear myself. So you've got your dual system. You've got how much is being produced from energy, from electric, and then you've got how much is being produced through petrol. And that's the sort of idea that you get in your head. So when you push the accelerator down harder, it's a lot more petrol because that's our turbo, right?
Yeah.
And then when it's a little bit more economic, that's our battery because we can produce.
Yeah.
So it's a really good way to think of it. It's like how much of a percentage is, it's never one or the other. It's always a bit of both.
Excellent way of putting it. Did you thought of that yourself?
I did actually, yeah, just now.
Impressive, mate. And I think that's why it's important to understand because when we're doing base training, if you like, that's what we're growing our battery capacity.
Yeah.
So the reason why base training is so important in endurance, even if you want to just improve your lactate threshold, the base training is important because you're always using that as your foundation in order to be able to push harder into your anaerobic zones.
Yeah, the base is, it's interesting because the base is essential to increasing that lactate threshold. If you don't increase your base, then your type 1 muscle fibers and then mitochondria aren't as efficient as getting rid of it, that lactic acid within the muscle fiber. So if you don't train that, you are severely limited.
Good. That helps probably put it into a bit more context. The other reason, which is good to know that is, and we won't go down there too far, but your diet can actually affect the production of lactic acid in your blood as well. So if you're predominantly fueling more with carbohydrates, you're in a position to be able to produce more lactic acid. If you're fueling more, maybe more the ketogenic diet, then you are limiting yourself in order to be able to create lactic acid or push up to the intensities to create that much lactic acid. So for people who often we see come into endurance and maybe start to cut down on carbohydrates thinking the latest keto diet is the way to go, they might find that their ability to go for a long time at low intensity improves, but their ability to push harder or harder for longer may actually diminish.
Yeah, 100%. That's why it's really important to think about your fueling in specifics to what session you're actually running, right? So if it's a hard session, you limit your carbohydrates, then you're limiting your top end, which is that defies the point of the session.
Yeah.
But if you're going for a long endurance ride, 3-4-er, you don't need to necessarily fuel that specifically unless you've got a tactic within that to try and like stress one system.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll come on to a little bit about maybe how you do fuel your longer sessions based around lactate because it does have a role to play. The longer you go on, the your lactate profiling might shift. I say might, but we'll come on to that. So mate, let's talk a little bit about ourselves. We went to Wolfie's in Abu Dhabi a few weeks ago to their high performance center. and we did a lactate test.
Yes, it was very good.
Did you enjoy it?
I had a great time.
let's talk a little bit first about what that looks like in terms of actual practicalities. So in order to measure lactate, you need to get a blood sample.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be a big one. We're not going to get syringes out and, you know.
We can do. We can do.
But all we need is a pinprick of blood, is what they call it. So you have anyone who's ever tested their blood glucose before, you know, anyone who's seen diabetics doing it, you stick a pin normally in your finger or your ear.
Yep.
You don't stick a full on pin. It's a device that shoots a pin in and then pulls it out on a spring. Not dangerous at all, unless you get it really wrong. I mean, you have to be really good to mess that up.
You've got to be like very well trained.
Absolute special.
Mess it up, yeah.
But you take a small pinprick of blood, which when I was in uni, some people were worried about passing out when they were doing it. And I remember one guy took the pinprick, saw the blood coming out of the finger, hit the deck.
That's not his fault, mate. That's not his fault. He's blood, I don't know, allergic.
It was brilliant, but it's really not invasive. It's the only way that it starts to get sore, and anyone who has been at uni to do sports science will know this, is if you do it repeatedly in the same area over and over again for the whole 6 week of your of your laboratory testing.
And then you just get this big purple finger.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
So we take a small pinprick of blood, and then that goes on to the lactate testing. I can't remember what it's called now, but it's basically like a small stick that you then put into the testing machine. Or if you're in a lab, it'll go into a test tube, which is surrounded by a certain amount of fluid, which the machine that you put it in knows exactly how much, which is how it tells the concentration of the lactate within the blood in there, which then goes into a centrifuge and figures it out that way. But there are portable ways of testing, and this is the one we used at Wolfie's.
Yeah.
Which is stick into a machine, which then gives you a millimol reading.
Millimol reading, yeah. It's really easy, actually, and that's why it's become a little bit more popular, because their devices are handheld.
Yeah.
You can take them anywhere. You can take them to a track, to a swim pool, to on a bike outside.
Yep.
And it can be done with relatively low skill and get relatively consistent results.
Yeah. And you've looked at into these, and you said that the reliability-wise, they look pretty good.
Yeah, they get really good write-ups, and it's industry standard as well. So you look at which ones are used in hospitals and stuff, and you can buy them online for not that much money, really.
Yeah.
It's the strips that cost the most money.
Yeah, they're the ones. Not as much as those core sensors, though, that you can swallow for internal temperature.
Not for that.
You know, they're like $50 a pop. Yeah. I think the lactate strips are about $25, something like that.
Per pop, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing with this, doing it on your own is quite tricky.
You'd have to brick yourself. It'd be quite tricky. Having a good team around you, or people know what they're doing, and it has to be systematic, right? It has to be like standardized.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't retest.
Yeah.
So having somebody to pinprick you, then have somebody to note how many millimoles was down, what time, what watts, what heart rate,
yeah,
is really important.
And if you're trying to compare it to like a blood glucose reading, it's a lot different, because you're normally not, you know, running close to what we'll get onto lactate threshold, or riding or swimming, and then trying to take your own blood lactate. Your blood sample, you're normally taking glucose at rest. So imagine riding your bike, stopping after whatever, 5 minute hard effort, pricking your finger, not allowing sweat to go onto the blood sample, putting that onto the stick, putting it into the machine, and noting down all the things you just said. It's a two-person job.
It's a nightmare. That would be I've never thought about actually doing it myself. Going into like a 20 minute lactate effort, yeah, and then imagine. Coming out. Yeah, not sweating in these conditions.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. So we went to professional center for it, the High Performance Center down at Wolfie's in Abu Dhabi, Al Hudriyat Island, which is shaping up to be just an insane island, isn't it?
Just a mecca, right? For everything and everybody. It's going to be, next 2 years are going to be so interesting to see how that place develops. It's super cool now, but when they get everything they plan to have in, it's just going to be next level.
Yeah. Anyway, we went and got tested. What did we do first? Anthropometrics. We got our body fat done. Calipers,
lovely test.
More invasive than the blood lactate reading.
Well, he's trying to grab some body fat of you. It's a nightmare.
You found some. And then we used our own bikes on their turbo trainer, which using your own bike, I think, is so key with these sort of tests, because you want it to be as close to what you're actually doing or training with in the real world as possible, right?
Yeah, familiarity. You also want to have time and experience on a turbo as well to know how it feels.
True, yeah. So
that would shock you.
Your first time on a turbo in what, a year?
Yeah, literally. And then you And then also familiarize yourself with the lab setting, because that was quite a labby setting with lots of numbers being thrown at you. Two people you've never met before, totally different environment. It's definitely going to raise the heart rate and the stress levels.
I felt at home.
Of course you did. You love labs.
I loved it.
You love labs.
So you're, yeah, you, that's a really good point, actually. I mean, a test is a test when you're doing it on your own, but when you're in a test environment, the game changes a little bit, because you've got, well, two sets of eyes on you at least. So yeah, I think, what do you recommend there, mate, if you are going to get it tested in a lab and you've not been in one before, or you're a bit nervous about it, how would you approach it?
That's a good question, and it's a hard answer. Probably go and have a little scope just to familiarize myself with it. So if you've got if it's in Abu Dhabi, yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare, but if you're going down there anyway, plan the test a bit further in advance and then go and check it out and just have a ride there, just so you can get to know the software they use, the protocol, so you're going in and it's not new.
Yeah. I'd even say just watch a video on YouTube so you see how it rolls.
Oh, even better.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, so we're testing it with, obviously through your blood, small pinprick on the machine that tells you, and then you we're noting down the other metrics around it. So we went and got it tested 2 weeks ago now, and we'll go and get it tested in another about 4 weeks or 3 weeks. And I think most people listening to this show will have access to some form of lab and able to go and test it. Rarely, I don't think anyone listening to this show will have a lactate testing meter to be doing this constantly with them, as we see on YouTube.
Probably not.
With the Norwegians, right? So when we get that data then, or let's start with, what data are we picking up from the lactate profiling itself? Because we're not using lactate as a measure during our training sessions. Why are we measuring it?
So you can work out and create equivalence, basically. So your heart rate, so you want your LT1 and LT2, we'll get onto that later as well. So a percentage of heart rate.
Not VT.
Actually, ventilate thresholds, you can do that as well. Right. You can get it all done.
This is the confusion of it.
There's lots of words like OBLA and MLSS and all this nonsense, but actually what they're testing is two lactate points, and then they relate that to your power and your heart rate. If you're on a bike, if you're on an outside and running on a treadmill, it's to velocity and heart rate again. Then you take that, and then you can relate it back to your training zone. So you know that below LT1, which is this heart rate, a percentage of your heart rate, you can train, and that's training appropriately. The whole point of this is that we get a more accurate and specific measure of your fitness and also your zones.
Yeah.
Therefore, when you're training, you can be a lot more accurate and saying, I'm not going to overtrain. I'm going to train like 60, 70% or 80% in this percentage to train my aerobic capacity. And then above that, like 5-10%, and you can be accurate at that. That's the whole point.
And so if we're looking at it from almost three zones, basically with a lactate profile, under like 1 or 0.8, we're saying you're at a low intensity. So you're now predominantly fueling your exercise with oxygen. So there is a less breakdown of glucose within the cells in order to create energy. So we have less lactate being created.
Simple as,
So under 0.8, your first reading, interesting though, sometimes your first reading when they take it
is higher, right?
Is higher. And now that's because it's in there from either day before or even the morning of training that you've been doing. But then what's amazing is when you watch it actually drop. If you ride at a low intensity, your body actually shifts the lactate out of the blood and it drops back down.
Starts working, right? And they're the shunting mechanisms that we're looking at.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to promote when you're exercising at a low intensity. That's what you're getting better at doing. When we start to go up towards more like 2 millimoles to 3 millimoles, we're working more in what a lot of people would understand as being their tempo range.
Yeah.
So it's not too hard, but equally it's not that easy.
Very, very gray.
Gray zone.
Love it. Very specific to what you're doing.
And then the most common VT2, or the most common threshold that we see being used is at 4 millimoles, which is, once you've surpassed that 4 millimole measurement for more than two readings, they would then define that you're working at your lactate threshold.
Which is something you sustain for 45 up to a minute, like a 40K TT, depends on how fast you are.
So the definition is, once you've surpassed that, you will now continue to build lactate in the blood without being able to remove it as fast as you are building it.
Yeah.
So eventually exercise will cease because lactic acid is enabled to be used back into the cycle, into the Krebs cycle, to be used again, because there's just too much of it in the blood.
Yeah, literally. If you're just looking on a graph, it would go a slowly, slowly rising line, and then all of a sudden it just shoots up at an exponential rate, and yeah, that's your LT2.
And I like to say to some people, if you imagine a boat with a hole in it, if you're in easy sea conditions, you can bail the water out quicker than it comes in. But once it gets rough, the water's coming in through the hole over the side. You can't bail it out quick enough. You're going to sink.
You're fully cooked.
You're in the bin.
You're going to sink.
You're in the salty bin.
Absolutely.
Good. So when we're looking at, if you imagine a profile or a curve going nice and even along the bottom and then gently starts to rise up, you can also equate that to your heart rate or your power or your speed, or in the pool, CSS. You're then watching when it goes into a fast, sharp rise, and that will also happen with your heart rate. But heart rate, because it's an internal monitor, but you might not see, you actually might see a drop in your speed, power, a little bit after. So you're not going to see in your power curve a whole lot of difference when your lactate actually starts to turn, the lactate turn point, in an external measure of it, but internally you will see a difference.
Yeah. You just complicated for everybody listening.
Sorry.
It's all right. Sorry, folks. You got a little bit too scientific there.
So let's go back to heart rate then, because that's what a lot of people use whether they're running or riding. So what are we seeing in your heart rate when we see that you hit the lactate turn point?
A plateau. So it just steadies out because it can't really go that much higher. So it's, you see a little rise, and then it sits, and then it just doesn't really go that much higher. Like the rate of increase doesn't go that much higher.
You might get another, 10 to 15 beats higher than your thresholds?
Yeah. Depends how hard you go, right?
In the textbooks.
It's all very much person specific, that one.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So what we actually can get, which is more useful, maybe more useful than a lactate threshold heart rate, is you get your heart rate at the lower intensities.
Yeah, so you train, well, at the low intensities, it means it's a little bit more reliable. And then if you see your LTE1, and then you say that's that heart rate, so just train below that.
So LTE1, you're meaning more like 2 millimoles?
Above, well, 2 millimoles or under. Again, depends on the person. But 1.5, 1.52?
It actually depends on what literature you read, but
yeah,
basically it's sustainable.
Yeah, so it's not like shooting up crazily. And then you can... From that, yeah, you can get it. What's interesting here, and actually anywhere, is that heart rate's such a variable thing anyway. If you train the same conditions day in, day out, it's reliable. But then taking that as gospel sometimes is a little bit, it's a little bit misleading.
Yeah. Especially if you're in a variable weather environment like we are. But if you're training indoors a lot, then you can control the conditions. I actually think it's a great measure to use if you do know where your lactate turn point is. And we, as we're saying, we're not testing this every day, but we're going to test it every, say, 6 weeks. So that actually over a year, you can build up a really good portfolio of your lactate profile.
Yeah, and you can see how much it's improving. So how much of the, basically fractional utilization of your VO2. So how much you're actually using, or how high you can get to your top, your VO2 max, and how well you can work there, and how far that LT1 is. Again, that's going to confuse a lot of people. Sorry.
No, let's put it into terms then. So let's... Say for example, let's go with athlete, whatever, Joe Bloggs.
Oh, Joe, yeah.
So he reaches his 4 millimole turn point at 200 watts.
Yeah.
Okay, so that we can then define as being, well, you say being his functional threshold power, maybe not functional, that would be then defined as his threshold power.
Yeah.
If you were to do an FTP test, which is your, let's call it your standard 20 minute all out effort, remove 5%, that number, that 200 watts, will likely be very close to the FTP test number as well. Which is why they use FTP tests, because not everyone has access to a lactate measuring lab.
Exactly. It's actually a really good test. If it's done honestly and done well, if you're not like over and unders, if you're consistent,
yeah,
it's been shown to be quite a valid way to figure out what your lactate heart rate is and your critical part, well, your your FTP.
And a test is only as good as its repeatability as well, right? So the easier it is to repeat, the better a test it is.
Yeah, of course.
So he comes back then in 6 weeks and he now reaches 4 millimole lactate turn point, but his power is 420 watts.
Easy.
Is 220 watts.
Yeah.
So we can now say that his lactate threshold power has improved.
Yes.
By 20 watts.
Yes.
Because at the same blood millimole.
Yeah, it's gone up. The power's gone up. So the output's gone out, gone up for the input, basically.
So it's quite a simple measure to be using to
super simple
test results.
They've only got three zones. Like, so, it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Below, gray, or above.
Above. So the reason that's good to know is when you're then defining for sessions, I mean, technically you should be able to hold your threshold power for around 60 minutes, or like you said, 40K TT. I'm not sure how true that is for a lot of people who's...
Not even for me. I don't know what I'm talking about.
But you then can base your training intensities over endurance periods with accurate data.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it really is. It's making sure that the data you're using to track your intensities is accurate, and then you can test it every 6 weeks, which makes sure you can see if it's improving and you're having the desired effect. It's as simple as that. People overcomplicate it so much. Yeah. That's in essence what it is.
What it is, yeah. The interesting side to it is when you then start going, let's say you've got a 4 hour endurance ride, you believe your FTP to be at 200 watts. For the first 2 hours, that might be the case, but for the next 2 hours under fatigue, your threshold might have moved.
Yeah.
Probably down. I mean, definitely down.
Definitely down.
So now we're looking more like 185 watts. The reason why the pro athletes are using a lactate meter so often is so that they can make sure hour three into their endurance ride, because they know their threshold power will have drifted down, they also want to make sure that they're not then working with a lactate
too hard, right?
Concentration too hard for what they want it to be. So if people are wondering, well then why, if lactate meters correlate closely with power or heart rate, why do they measure it so much? The reason is you gain more accuracy when working with a lactate profile meter rather than without.
Yeah, of course. But we're not accessed that, and nor do we need it in some cases. We don't need that level of accuracy. We're not like a lot of us, well, a lot of people listening here will not be professional athletes, therefore won't need constant testing in a session.
Yeah.
Doesn't really make, in terms of time efficiency and actual enjoyability of a ride, not going to stop halfway through a group ride and go, right, lads, let's get pinpricks out.
And I think if you know if you've got a couple of measurements of it as well. So if you're using power on the bike, let's say, so you know that your threshold power is 200 watts, and let's say your threshold heart rate is 150. Mm. If at 2 hours in, you're holding 180 watts and your heart rate's gone up to 155, then you know, okay, something's drifting here. I need to slow down.
Yeah, that's a really good, pretty good point, actually. The comparative. So if you get them both numbers, then you have a relatively two measures that you can reference point. And also, if you can reference those numbers to an RPE, then you're winning.
That was my next question for you. When you did the test based on RPE, did you know when your lactate point came?
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you?
Yeah, I was cooked. You knew exactly what your numbers were.
I knew exactly when it was, yeah. And it correlated exactly the same on the sheet.
Got such a dial in. And that's what we're always preaching, right? Well, we didn't exactly practice on Friday, but that's what we're...
my turn point happened in the car on the way up.
That's what... My turn point happened picking up Ash from the Dubai Marina Mall.
Are you petting? We're going to go.
No,
but you were late.
Late? 10 minutes, mate. But yeah, that's the little golden nugget, is relating those numbers and relating that feeling from the test, and then also going into a training situation and always having that reference point to RPE leads those numbers to mean more. Mm. And then it always makes complete sense in your head. And then you get like sensations and feedback systems then start to make even more sense. It's cool.
Excellent. Can you describe the feeling?
Pain.
Not pain though, is it?
No, it's
not like a VO2 max.
No, it's not a maximal test. That's nothing we haven't said.
No.
It's not max. It's sub max.
Yeah.
So we're not looking to get you to absolutely go in the bin, although that is also good. we're looking to get your turn points, which are not at your maximum. They're way down. You want your aerobic threshold, really.
Yeah.
And then a little bit of lactate in there. So you just feel like it's generally turning a screw until you're sweating. You can't say as many words in a one sentence without breathing. Mm. Just those little classics.
Yeah. I don't want to bring up a really wanky point, but I can actually tell because I stopped being able to only breathe through my nose, and it seems to correlate very well with the lactate turn point.
Does it?
Yeah.
I don't breathe through my nose. What's that then?
Dead against it, you. So that is the feeling you get once you stop being able to comfortably breathe through your nose or do the talk test.
The talk test.
So being able to say a sentence without taking a breath in between every word, then you're probably working around your lactate turn point.
Yeah.
So for someone working without power, without heart rate, definitely without lactate, if you're working on RPE, it's good to know those things, because if you are to a point where you want to take a session easy, but you need a breath between every word, or you can only breathe through your mouth and not comfortably in through your nose, you're probably there.
100%, yeah. And that's why we use it as a measure.
Yeah.
And like you say, oh, could you hold a conversation? That's why a coach who's meant to be on an easy ride with you might start chatting a lot and then ask you to chat a lot as well, just to make sure that things are going the way they should be.
Yeah, that's why you lie every time on Training Peaks, whether the number 1 out of 10 was it should have been or not. Such a good, such a good measure of a session, isn't it? Like, oh, that was 4 out of 10. Well, your heart rate data tells me that it looks more like an 8.
More like an 8, and you couldn't breathe. You couldn't actually say a word. You're diagonally breathing.
So we've used a very scientific measure to bring back to something for a feeling.
Yeah, I mean, that's most of the time, right? That's what we're going for.
And it's interesting that, like, for the breathing side of things, the other thing you might see on a lactate threshold test or profile is, we've said this before, VT1 or VT2. What are we dealing with here?
Ventilatory threshold.
Yeah.
Or how much you chuck in and out and how much you can use in a minute.
Oxygen you're talking about, yeah?
Yeah, sorry, oxygen. Yeah, sorry. So assume knowledge. Yeah. How much oxygen you can take in and basically spit out and use in a minute, and that's your ventilated thresholds.
I think on that note, if you're in a lab, and Wolfies are going to do this, they didn't with us, but if you're in a lab that can do your RER, which is a metabolic respiratory exchange ratio, then you're getting an RER ratio alongside a lactate profile, we're going to the Champs-Élysées because we've got all the data we need.
We're going to watch. We're not going to raise. But no, yeah, that if you can correlate the two,
yeah,
you're golden.
Gold
you're
standard.
Absolutely golden.
Yeah.
And they are going to do that, and I cannot wait to go and test that.
And that maybe there's another show in that, but that gets interesting because then you can start to play around with different fueling protocols and you can start to play around with different day-to-day diets and show yourself how much that shifts your metabolic profile alongside your lactate profile, because one definitely impacts the other.
Yeah, I think it's, again, if simple, like that sort of testing, which is quite complex and it's quite extra on top of what you want to do normally.
Yeah.
But actually, when you dial it down to how you can apply it, so applied sports science, it's actually really simple. Like you take that, you have a play with it, you look at your diet, say, okay, what you're having here, here, and here.
Yeah.
What are you fueling for?
Yeah.
Crack on.
Yeah.
In a nice way. But yeah, that's people get so put off by like science, but it's actually just things we can actually apply to your daily training to make sure that when we are saying easy, your body's set up for easy.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, agreed. So I think hopefully we've not confused people, but there is a way of being able to get very accurate with your data, which as coaches, both you and I would love to have. We'd love to have all our athletes do this test, right? Because we get some more accurate data to work with, but it's also not practically reasonable to request it. And that's why we coach with a way that we could use this data, but we can also get more than get by. We can excel without it as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's a lot of the tests out there that don't have lactate involved. So we don't take prim pricks are actually really valid as a training methodology and to set your zone so you're not overtraining. And then if you all dial back to RPE, that's you're winning, right?
Yeah.
I think there's so much data out there and there's so much numbers you can get. I would love every one of my athletes to have a lactate test and then also get the old gas analysis out.
Yeah.
Every 3 months.
You like a Douglas bag, eh?
I love a good Douglas bag. unless you get to like open it.
Put the cork in it.
and then you can make that relatable and then make it practical for the person and make it so their training's even better. So in terms of time efficiency and specifically the training, you're going to get bang for buck because you're going to be so much more accurate. But the other methods are more than good enough.
Yeah, I think it's more important to understand the RPE chart than it is to understand your own lactate profile.
Yeah, as an athlete, 100%.
Yeah, so it's not the be all and end all. It's just a very nice thing to have if you can. Like carbon in run shoes.
Like carbon and run shoes or bikes, eh?
Carbon and bikes.
Carbon and bikes.
Yeah, fair enough.
Aluminium, that's all right as well. You can get by on that. Steel these days, not so much.
Tom Hager, steel. Does he listen?
Maybe. Probably, yeah.
Good. Then hopefully that's everything people need to know about lactate testing.
Just to confuse people, one more.
Go on then.
So I was doing a little bit of reading before this. Very unlike me. And I read an article by this fella who was talking about the maximum metabolic steady state. He actually doesn't like LT1 and LT2.
It's a problem.
He says, and also all the different acronyms around lactate, because it's been studied since 1930, so there's loads of different, like OBLIS, MLSSs. They all mean it's around about the same thing.
It's scientists wanting to publish a paper trying to be original or something.
Exactly.
And they need to relax. Everyone needs to get on board with one term.
And crack on
and
with
crack
it.
Crack on with it, yeah. But in then, the bin or not in the bin?
But yeah, this maximal metabolic steady state is actually pretty cool, because then you can make it specific to your event. And that's something that's also very interesting. That denotes your training type. So if you are a 1500 meter runner, or you're a 10K runner, or a half marathon runner, your training type and your volume and your intensity is going to be completely different. And having a specific like metabolic rate that's like steady for that one event is actually crucial.
Mm.
And then you take that, and then you can denote and change the training type. It's really cool. It's a nice thought.
So we're going to confuse people here, but let's say you're let's go for something like not a 10K runner, something shorter, but you can say, okay, I know I can hold, let's say 4.8 millimoles for this amount of time.
Yeah.
That's then your lactate threshold turn point that you're using specifically for your event.
Exactly. Yeah. Ah. And that makes everything specific.
Yeah.
So then if you're a 40K TT, you do the same thing.
You need a lot of data for that, don't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. But it's a nice idea.
And SPSS.
No, let's not go there. That would be confused people even more.
Next week, Bland and Altman plots on the Unified Endurance Show.
Absolutely not.
Mate, I think that answers some good questions there. If you do have other questions, please let us know. We'll get this guy back on. He's doing a podcast tour at the moment, so he'll always happy to come back on and chat things through. So please email rf@innerfight.com or tw@innerfight.com. What's your Instagram? BobCam88.
Oh, get off. RE_Foster.
RE_Foster on Instagram. What were you going to summarize with?
I was going to say, do you want to summarize it? Do you want to summarize what you've said? Like, how long have we been talking?
38 minutes.
Yeah, do you want to summarize it?
Yeah, I can do.
You do it and then I'll do it.
Well, summary is lactic acid, not to be feared, but to be understood. It's an important marker during exercise to know which intensity you're working at and that you're actually hitting the goal of the session that you are doing. Also, with your last point, it's a great marker to know specific to the event you're doing as well. We test it through a pinprick of blood into either a standalone machine or a portable machine. Very non-invasive, and a submaximal test can be performed. You want to take it from there?
I've lost you.
Yeah.
You keep going.
Well, you then correlate it with your heart rate, power, and most importantly, RPE, which means that the test is useful to have, but not the be-all and end-all. Not every athlete needs to be doing it. Only doing it if you want to get some more accurate data and you have the forecast to be able to go back in and test again in 6 weeks, 12 weeks, or 18 weeks
time.
That's
a bloody good point, that last one. That's the one, isn't it?
One test means nothing.
One and done is nothing. Yeah, don't do that, people. Please don't do that. Yeah, we could get into the science of it a little bit more, but I think I can't really top that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic, well done.
Excellent. Thank you very much for listening, guys. As I said, if you do have questions, please email into the show. You can email rf@innerfight.com or tw@innerfight.com. I do urge you, if you've not listened to it, to go over to the Inner Fight podcast and listen to Rob Foster. Do you remember what the show number you're on? No idea. 800 and something. And listen to his coaching ethos. Really good chat. I think it's worth listening to. And if that does excite you to be coached by him, then you have to go on his wait list.
Correct.
Excellent. Thank you very much for listening.